Here we go.
Here we go. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure for me to be here today. And as a matter of fact, I will complete, I think, in a nice way, the great introduction that Jordan made as a health affairs and food marketing expert. So what I wanted to share with you this morning is, to go through and define and put in perspective what are the real health challenges the food industry are facing today. How are they seeing those challenges and responding to those challenges? And are there any ways or solutions or opportunities for other groups like public health organizations, governments, university academics, or others to help and support them to achieve their goals? So as Jordan said, just a very brief word on Enzyme for those of you who don't know our company. Well, Enzyme is the Canadian leading agency specialized in health and sustainable health and wellness. We have our head office based in Montreal here, but having operations all across Canada. I'm personally responsible of the health affairs group, so any type of communication and marketing programs around health and nutrition issues. So maybe to start, just to give you a couple of numbers, when we look at the food product innovation portrait, how is it distributed? And I'd like to thank for that XTC World Innovation, a partner of ours, who gave us those numbers for me this morning. So that's the dynamics of food innovations worldwide. XTC is an expert at identifying, analyzing, and organize, if I can say, the food product innovation around the world. They are present in 46 countries, so they have a very good overview of what's going on out there. And the way they classify food product innovation is under five different themes, if I can say, health being one of those, physical, pleasure, convenience, and ethics. So the numbers you're seeing here is based on what's the number one or the main innovative aspect a food manufacturer will put forward on his product. You'll probably agree with me that most of those food products we find today don't focus just on one aspect that is innovative, but there is normally one that is really put forward and more in front of the others, and that's the portrait. As you can see, pleasure is definitely leading. Almost more than half of food product innovation in 2010 were based mostly or first and foremost on pleasure arguments. Health, surprisingly maybe, is only at 24.5% of food product innovation. But what's interesting is that if we cut the world in pieces and have a specific look on North America, the portrait is quite different. The number of food product innovations that focus on health arguments is not equal, but much closer to the one focusing more on pleasure arguments. And if we would split Canada and U.S., you would see that this is even stronger in U.S. One thing that we don't see this year, but that I would like to share with you, is that in 2007 and 2008, for the first time in the history of XTC World Innovation, the number of food product innovation focusing on health promises was higher in North America than on pleasure arguments. We had never seen that before.
Yeah. What's the physical category?
The physical, each of those categories split in different trends, specific trends. Like for health, for example, it might be interesting to tell you that you have the medical aspect, the natural aspect, or the more what we call vegetal aspect of food. The physical is more related to arguments for slimness, for example, energy, and you know, more well-being. As pleasure is more sophistication and variety of senses and everything. So that's just to give a certain perspective on the market. So as the public health issues become common facts, the pressure on the food industry is really, really growing. I can share with you, there's a recent study that was done with one of our partners among the food processors in Quebec, and they found out that the majority of them were, first of all, acknowledging they're having a role in the maintenance of public health in general. And they're willing, actually, to play that role and to do something to help, but how to do it and at what cost, those are major questions and issues that stop them most of the time. They're not alone, of course, when we're talking about healthy eating. Governments and public health organizations are important actors in there. And consumers also, at the end of the day, as we'll see, they are, I would like to say suffering, maybe, or for sure. Well, I'll come to that afterwards because I don't want everyone to get confused. If I start more with the governments and public health organizations, the challenges they're facing, and this list is not complete, you agree, but those are the main that I would like to focus on when it comes to healthy foods. For sure, the growing burden of all major chronic disease. We have to deal with that growing healthcare costs, obviously. But if you look at the last one, or the one just before, involvement of the food industry, this is something quite new. The governments and public health organizations so far have been quite uncomfortable with that close relationship they could have with the food industry because of culture, mindset, whatever. The list of reasons is quite long. But today, minds are changing, and things are changing in their perspective and in their objectives. We are presently working on some projects with them, and I can tell you there is a real solid intention to do something and work more closely. But again, how to do it, that's another story. That's another challenge. Maybe one example to show you how they at least started to move in that direction. Most of you have maybe heard about that document, the Vision de la saine alimentation, or a vision for healthy eating, creating healthy food environments. It was launched by the Ministère de la Santé last May 2010, and it came as a result of an extensive consultative process with, of course, some people from academic science, food science, and the industry, to see among all those politics that we're having around, and there was a need for a clear definition of what healthy eating should stand for. And without having the pretension to have the only exclusive definition, they at least put something very clear on paper. And this paper is specifically intended to the actors of the food environments, and that's also something very different, because most of the tools they've been developing so far was for either healthcare professionals or consumer at the end, but this one is not intended for consumers at all. It's truly for the food environments actors. It was not made in English so far, so I apologize if those the following two slides are in French, but I tried to make them as clear as possible. The basic between their vision is that we should not look anymore at a food just as a food alone, but let's have a look at the diet in general. But we have no choice, again, to have a certain look at the foods, and we should classify them or organize them depending on their nutritional value, of course, but also on the frequency it is offered, not consumed, but offered, again, because we're targeting the industry. So if we're talking about a food or a meal that has a very high nutritional value, it should be considered as a food that you can eat on a daily basis. And on the other side of the spectrum, when the nutritional value is very low, it should be eaten just exceptionally. And there is a whole range of foods, for sure, obviously, that are in between of that. But the objective of that vision is not to point exactly, precisely each food and say this one goes there, this one goes there. But as a whole, the offer that is given to consumers should take that in consideration. And depending on what type of environment or company or service you are, the amount and the frequency of that offer of very high nutritional value foods or not should also change. If you're a hospital, a school, or kindergarten, you should definitely focus exclusively on what they call daily foods or occasional foods with no foods of exception at all. As if you're a restaurant, it is definitely acceptable that you have foods of exception, but make sure that your offer is not concentrated on that mostly and just a little bit of daily foods, again, which is what we find most of the time in the on the market right now. So it kind of organizes and gives a new perspective on what healthy eating should look like in Quebec. When it comes to consumers, it's tough for consumers these days when we talk about healthy eating. What's healthy eating? Yeah, I love the expression of the word infobesity that just reflects the fact that there's just too much information, or so much information, I should say, maybe. It truly became not just a challenge, but I'd like to say a problem these days. People are definitely completely confused, and they are more and more skeptical. We've probably seen some articles on that recently, again, in some important journals. And the question that we hear and that we see from them are always coming back to that same concept. At the end of the day, what's a healthy food? Just because you took out a part of the sodium, does that make my French fries healthier, or should I? Am I okay to eat them as much as I'd like? There's a big confusion there. Too much info, not enough explanations. At the same time, people are more and more educated, and at the opposite, they understand less than ever what's going on out there. And their last but not least question is, do I really need this? When you have to pay more for a food that pretends to be healthier, if you're telling me as a government or a public health organization I should take care of myself and eat better, and when I look at the industry or the offer on the market, I just can't find those foods because they're not available, or they are so expensive I just can't afford it, then there is a disconnect there. If it's so essential and important to me, why can't I find it, or why it's not more accessible? So there's a real problem there. Conciliation between pleasure and health is also a challenge. Consumers want pleasurable food, but they want food that are not harmful to them, for sure. But because the food industry, for some companies, went so far in pushing the bar with the health arguments, and others don't go in that route anymore, it's so clear in consumers' mind what should be or what they consider to be a healthy food or a bad food. Now, can French fries be okay? And is yogurt always healthy? Not necessarily. It depends on many factors, but I'll show you some examples after. It's feasible, but for sure in their minds, in consumers' minds today, it's not so clear. It's either I choose it because I expect that it will taste good and it will be pleasurable, or I choose it because it will be good for me. Anyway, consumers are definitely ready for change. I won't go through that in very much details. You probably have seen those numbers a couple of times, but most of consumers, and there are a lot of studies asking the same question, and the results are approximately always the same. Most of consumers are saying year after year that they're trying to eat healthier foods and have a healthier diet. Two interesting numbers also that show that, yes, they're willing to, but at the end they realize that they don't have the full control in their choices and they're truly influenced by the environment. 90% of the Quebec population are in favor of obesity prevention measures in school. They are right now. and 60% of the Quebec population would like to be offered more healthy options in restaurants. Would they choose it? That's another story. But they're willing, they're open to that idea now. Yes?
More healthy options in restaurants? How about a healthy option in restaurants?
That's an excellent remark. That's an excellent. Well, that's how the question was asked, but it would be interesting to dive in that a little bit more. So I come back to the food industry. There are main challenges when it comes to healthy eating. Of course, meat constantly changing consumer needs and desires because they are confused, because they receive pressure and different types of information all around, they change their mind all the time. And the motivations for choosing a food or another, or even the same food from a day to another, won't be the same. And it's quite a challenge for the food industry to try to understand who they're really talking to. Respect policies and regulations, obviously, the governments here and in Europe and everywhere in the world are trying to not to squeeze, but to make things, how can I say that? Yeah, sorry, I lost my point completely, but I think you get the point. Innovate, of course, all food companies have to innovate in terms to maintain their competitiveness and be profitable at the end of the day, of course. So as a result, we could see the food industry as being squeezed in many ways by the governments and public health organizations and consumer at the other end. And well, we can ask ourselves, is there a way out to that situation, because it's absolutely not comfortable. There are different solutions. One of them is to build bridges between science, public health, and industry initiatives. And there's one project that we at Enzyme are working on right now that is very precisely going in that direction. I can't present that to you in details because it's not public yet, but what I can tell you, it's a huge program led by the food industry themselves, who decided before the governments or public health organization impose them more and more criteria to follow or policies. They first acknowledged they have a role and they wanted to take the lead in that. And we're creating a big program involving health experts, science experts, nutrition experts, and the food industry, of course, so to invite food processors to engage themselves in modifying their offer, you know, in order to make it healthier. It's a, yeah.
On this slide for a second, I just want to get their feedback on the when we look at the food industry as a whole, and I just want to focus a little bit more on the food processors, mm-hmm. more specifically, because they're producing the goods that are actually being sold in the retail environment or even in the food service world. Can you give us a little bit of insight on the sentiment, the mental posture of these guys right now? You're giving us the feedback that they're squeezed right now mm-hmm. by regulators on that side, consumers on the other side. But what about this? What's their mental posture right now? How do they feel? Are they giving up the fight? Are they eager to find solutions? Are they bored? What can you give us?
I'll give you just a part of the answer, because I'll come to that more in details afterwards. But all types of reactions are on the table for sure. I would say most of them are not giving up, but they're really changing or re-questioning themselves as of how they should address those health challenges. Is it just a question of reducing, again, salt or fat or whatever? Or who are we as an organization? What is our culture? Are we willing to go that route? And if so, to which extent? So it creates a new and more in-depth reflection by most of the food marketers. That goes over and beyond just the product itself or the product composition itself, but as a company or as a brand, how should I address that? So I'll come to that more in details here. So going there, I'd like to share with you two different perspectives on those health challenges. The actual food industry perspective on all those issues and problems is actually seen by most of them as R&D issues first and foremost. They have to find a way technically to solve those problems. As a result, in terms of competitiveness, it's very soft and I should say weak, because if your idea was good enough, for sure it will be copied by your competitors in a couple of months, in a year if you're very lucky, but no more than that. As a result, the question we receive all the time, and I'll come back to that after, and I can tell you every single company we're working with, whatever the field, the type of food they commercialize, is what is the next hot ingredient or health benefit we should invest on? Because they have to renew themselves all the time. Just to reduce sodium is not enough. That again, your competitor will do it. So what's the next? Of course, we have ways and we have knowledge to answer that question, but it's a never-ending story at the end of the day. And my point is, what do consumers really want? Is it a low-fat or low-salt product? My experience tells me, no, that's not what they want. That's not what they're asking. What they're asking is a pleasurable product that causes no harm. That's what they're looking for.
I think you're right. I think it's more the positive versus negative thing. I don't think they're really looking for healthy ingredients. They're trying to avoid unhealthy ones. So you hear everyone trying to avoid, you know, high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
You don't hear anyone saying, I want more fiber. So they look to avoid things because that negative information is obviously more salient and important to them. And so if you're a manufacturer, you have to approach this from a totally different perspective, right?
Exactly. I would complete your comment by saying more and more consumers are being proactive or willing to be proactive and not just focusing anymore on those harmful ingredients, but appreciate, like, for example, probiotics that are really going very, very well and well received. So yes, you're right, but there is a new... there is a new era, there is a new open, new opportunities on the positive side of things also. But for sure, for food companies, they need to change their vision completely and their way of treating those challenges.
We just add on that, would they, so for instance, if a product had a positive and a negative attribute, which would they look at, which would they weigh more, is kind of where I was getting at. So probiotics versus corn syrup.
Yeah.
You know, so that's...
It's a very good question, and I had there, I skipped that, but a couple of examples of how it's expressed and what we see on the market when those challenges are addressed just are as R&D issues. You can see, you've seen all those products, it's all over the place, whether it's beer or butter or pizza, whatever.
Those are actually products? There's a beer called Slim Chance?
Yeah, those are real products. Yeah, those are real products.
I thought that was from The Simpsons or something.
No.
You have your beer and stay slim.
So, I mean it's great, and it does address some of the concerns consumers do have. But at the end of the day, there is no competitive advantage to go that route and just address that as an R&D issue. So our perspective on those nutritional and public health issues is that it's a cultural and marketing issue or deal, first and foremost. And even further, it's a brand experience issue. And just to illustrate that more strongly, you probably all recognize those three products. I could have put like tons on the slide. My point here is just to tell you, when you have a strong brand or a product that provides a very specific and strong experience, you just can't change it because it's too heavy in fat or sodium or whatever. If tomorrow or this afternoon you would go at McDonald's looking for a Big Mac because that's what you want to eat, and the lady at the counter tells you, well, good news, your Big Mac is now low fat, low sodium, and high in fiber. How would you react? You would probably say, thanks, but no thanks. What I'm looking for is a Big Mac. What you're offering me, nice, but don't call it a Big Mac. A Big Mac stands for something very specific that calls for a very precise experience. Same for Häagen-Dazs, same for Heinz, same for almost every product. And I would even say that it's true even for a product that is new and for a brand that is new. The first contact you have with that brand, even before you've tasted the product, you're having an impression, and you expect something from that product. It will be positive, it will be negative, whatever it is, there's something printed there. The next time you will be in contact with that brand, you still expect something very precise. So you can't play with the composition and nutritional value of a product without taking the brand experience into consideration. Now, I come back to that question I had at the beginning. Can we conciliate health and pleasure, or is it a wishful thinking? Again, I could have put many more products. To my point of view, it's not a wishful thinking. It's definitely something possible. And here's a whole bunch of products that do combine both. Now, if I let you have a look at those products more specifically, a couple of seconds, I'm quite sure you will all have in your mind the same question. Based on which criteria did I define or chose those products as being healthy and pleasurable? Because you see, there are chocolate chips cookies, there are chips and soup and Mexican cooking sauce and ham. And so based on what? What are my arguments? Well, I should answer your question. What a question. At the end of the day, what is a healthy food? Let's do a little game together, just for a few minutes. If I would ask you, just from a first impression, whether you know or not those products, which one of those do you think is healthier? I would guess, yeah? I would guess that most of you would probably say the one at the left, Steez. Now let's compare them. 35 grams of sugar, green tea, antioxidants, same thing there. But this Steez is also organic and fair trade certified. Does that make that product healthier? Second example, Special K Red Berry cereals and Jordan's Country Crisp.
I have nothing to do with that brand.
No.
I wish I did. Or maybe I don't.
So again, first impression, first contact, you might think that, well, Jordan looks maybe more refined, but it contains chocolate, and it's a breakfast cereal. The other one is Special K, it's Kellogg's, so we don't really know, but it's we can read on the packaging that it's made with whole grain, it's low in fat, with real fruits, and you see the amount of fiber, sugar, and sodium per 100 gram. And here's the status for the chocolate cereals. It's also made with whole grain, there is less fiber, but also less sugar. There is no salt, no artificial flavors, colors, or preservatives, and no GMOs. Is it healthier? Just one last. I like to do this. So two different cold cuts, 20 grams of proteins, 1.2 grams of fat, and it's approved by the Portuguese Cardiology Foundation. That's another type of argument. And on the other hand, no artificial flavors or preservatives. That's the distinction between the two. So I don't know how you see this or how you react to this as experts, but also as consumers. But my point is just to show you how hard and how tough it can be when you're a consumer, but also a food processor, to define what is a healthy food. At the end of the day, to me, it's impossible. It's just impossible to define. So we should stop asking us that question. As an individual, it's impossible because it varies depending on our knowledge, impressions, values, general health conditions, so on and so forth. And as a company, depending on your culture, the brand personality, regulatory restrictions, technological limits, knowledge and expertise of the group, your definition will definitely vary. So what I would pretend today and pledge for is that we should not use the expression healthy food anymore. It is wrong. We should always be talking about healthy eating or healthy diet, because a food by itself, even an apple, pure organic apple, if you just eat that on a daily basis, you won't maintain your health status. It's just impossible. It's too heavy for just one food at a time. So I suggest we ban that expression.
Thank you.
So in conclusion, time for change. Three things that I would like you to keep in mind with that argumentation. Again, there is no such thing as a healthy food. I think foods should no longer be categorized as being good or bad. It's a dream for me as a health professional and marketing expert that one day consumers will stop seeing foods as being either good or bad. If the food industry is moving in the right direction and the whole offer is modified and ameliorated in a sense that everything is basically good, some are better than the others, but there's nothing really harmful in what we eat, then this little angel and devil competition will stop forever, hopefully. Also, it's important to see health beyond the nutritional value. Yes, the nutritional value is key, it's core, it's very important, but it's not enough to define if it's healthy or not. And the other dimensions of health, as the social aspect of eating, cultural, economic, and so on and so forth, should definitely be always considered. And if you're a food manufacturer, when it comes to improving formulation, the brand experience should definitely always be considered as a key element in the equation. And I'll leave you on that beautiful salad, beautiful plate that I had the pleasure to enjoy in Lyon last year. And what I just wanted to show you as a last clin d'œil is what you see in the very middle of the salad is a big block of foie gras with caramelized apples and gingerbread. Now that I tell you this, is this a healthy plate? Is it still a healthy plate? My answer to that question, it was absolutely fantastic. Absolutely good. So again, if you look at each single food in a plate, in your plate, yes, you can say it's healthy, it's not empty. But as a whole, I had a wonderful meal, and I believe that I didn't harm myself in any way.
Now leave that out because we're getting hungry.
I'll just put that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.